passe un bon artiste, super, encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot.
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De I semifinale igjen!
Can you believe it, folks? The EHF Euro 2020 is taking place in Denmark. It's starting today, and this is the Uninformed Handball Hour with the official podcast. It's Chris O'Reilly here with Alex Gulish.
How are you, Chris?
And on site, boots on the ground in Kolding, it's Brian Campion.
My beautiful Hummel boots on the ground here in Kolding. Of course, Kolding came into this a little bit late. I think Denmark are probably the only country in the world who could pull a new venue out of their pocket last minute. So it's good to be here.
First impressions, Brian?
First impressions, it's cold. Danish winter, very much like the Irish winter, but good enough vibe so far. I think, you know, this is a tournament like no other. So I think it's going to take a few days to settle in here, but I'm definitely looking forward to the handball starting later today.
We haven't heard a lot of Alex Kulesh on the podcast in the build-up to this Euro, but he's here now and ready to give us some hot takes. But before we go into the takes themselves, what are you looking forward to most?
I'm looking forward to watching handball, watching a tournament that we didn't actually think was going to happen. I know we all hoped deep down that it would happen, but especially with those last-minute changes, it didn't seem like it would pull through. But good support from the Danish government. Denmark is doing quite well. We're going to see some high-level handball, which is just fantastic to see. And to be honest, what I'm looking forward to is the randomness of this competition, because this is a tournament like no other, as you mentioned. Teams are coming in a very different mindset to what we've seen before. The focus is slightly different. So I think there's going to be a bunch of surprises, especially in the first few rounds. And I'm looking forward to seeing how teams recover from that, especially.
The potential randomness for it all and the great unknown coming into this championship is really intriguing. And when I was looking through the four groups, which we're going to do in depth for this first podcast of the actual championship, there's so many tight groups in here that it's really hard to know. There are the traditional favorites and teams that you would reckon will be the top dogs in each of the groups. But with players out through COVID, players out through injury, teams not playing together for a year, teams not having test matches, not even knowing exactly what the 16 players are going to be on the court later today and tomorrow. It's super fascinating. And later on in the podcast, we're going to get some expert predictions from people from all around Europe. They're always fun as well, because we did it in January for the men's Euro and it went horribly wrong for everyone involved. I think nobody came out well on that. So I was really grateful that people were willing to do it again this time. And as you said, Alex, super grateful. We have to give all of our thanks to Denmark for coming and saving the day here. So let's take a look at the four groups. And just an overview for people who haven't looked into the championship yet. The 16 teams involved, four groups of four. Groups A and B are going to be in Herning. Groups C and D are going to be in Kolding. And two groups will be playing every day. So we'll have 6 days straight of handball in the preliminary round. The top three teams from each of the groups move on to the main round, and the matches that they play against each other, so the top three, carry on to the main round as well. So every single game in this preliminary round is important. Now, starting with Group A, shall we? And the reigning champions, France, are in there. Fifth place at the World Championship last year, Montenegro, who have had a bit of a shake-up. The host, Denmark, and the always dangerous Slovenia in that group as well. First thoughts, Brian?
I think this is probably the most difficult group to call, because from what we've seen in the past, we know that Slovenia always have at least one big shock up their sleeve. So I feel like Slovenia will beat one of those teams, France, Denmark or Montenegro. I don't know which one, but they have, of course, Anna Gross in their team, probably the most informed player in the world at the moment, I would say, arguably. She's top scorer of the Champions League. She should be backed up by the likes of Barbara Lazovic, and that's going to give her, obviously, very, very good support. Elizabeth Omaregi is going to be making her Slovenian debut after taking over Slovenian citizenship. So that's a lot of support there for Anna Gross. So I suspect that they will have a shock or two up their sleeves. Denmark, will they have the boost of being hosts? I don't know. Is it as strong this time? Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe the pressure's off and there's no crowd there. We know what the Danish media can be like when it comes to handball. And Montenegro, a bit of a shake-up there in terms of their coach being changed from Per Johannesson to Kim Rasmussen only 10 days before the tournament. So a lot of interesting talking points there.
With Montenegro and a new coach, I think we might see that being a little bit of an advantage for this team. Because when a new coach comes in, they're going to implement something simple, a strong defense, a simple attack, because that's all they have time for. But in a tournament like this, where there's so much changes, there's so much turnover in players and teams, the simple way of playing that will be implemented by Kim Rasmussen might be an advantage, where they just stick to what they're good at. So I actually see them having quite a good tournament this year.
Hmm. I see them potentially going out in the first round. So I don't know. It's so hard to know in this group. But it's interesting. Kim Rasmussen is a very good coach, and he's done some great things in the past. He took Poland to two semifinals in World Championships in recent years. He's clearly a strong coach. But I think them getting rid of Per Johannesson was a big mistake, to be honest, because he did take them to fifth place in the World Championship last year. He seemed to have a very good bond with them, him and Adrian Vasile, who's now the head coach of CSM Bucuresti. So they had had a pretty good grip of the team. And I think it was really when he said that he wasn't going to go on after the Euro that they decided to cut him out completely. So it's a tough one. You know, you said there that you reckon Slovenia is going to beat somebody in this group. The question is, who's it going to be? I mean, Denmark up first and then France. I reckon it could come down to that final group game on the 8th of December between Montenegro and Slovenia to decide who goes out.
And know for a fact that I wouldn't want to be facing Slovenia in the first game of the tournament. So Denmark need to cross their T's and dot their I's. Is that the other way around? Denmark needs to dot their I's and cross their T's before this game and be ready to go. Denmark have a very young squad as well, you know, so Sandra Toft will need to show her experience and lead that squad well. It's tricky to say, but I'm always up for a Slovenian surprise.
I spoke to Jesper Jensen a few weeks ago, and his philosophy on the Danish team is very interesting. And speaking about what he was focusing on, which was increasing their self-confidence, something that his sister, Trine Nielsen, who we had on the podcast during the summer, former Danish international, said that was going to be key for the Danish team as well. Now, they're missing Stine Jorgensen, who was the captain of the team, but she has retired from international handball. But they have a couple of very interesting playmakers with Mia Ray, who plays for Copenhagen, and Christina Jorgensen, who is more of a left back, but was being used at center back for the test matches before the European Championship against Norway. So I reckon they've got quite an exciting squad, and on form, probably two of the best goalkeepers in Europe, with Sandra Toft, who you mentioned there, Brian, who's been brilliant with Brest, and Althea Reinhardt, the other goalkeeper who plays for Odense. So between the two of them, I think they've got a great goalkeeping pair. Last year, they were the team that knocked out France on the final group game of the World Championship. So a bit of revenge on the cards for France, perhaps. The reigning champions, who, as you might have heard in the last podcast, had a pretty terrible time in Japan last year.
Yes, speaking of France, it seems like the sparkle around this team has faded very quickly. You know, they were this force coming through. They won, of course, the last Euros in 2018 and had the disappointing result last year. And it seems like all of the hype that was there seemed to collapse a little bit. And the players that really excelled in their rise, like Grace Zadi, Oran Konor, and Enzyminko, seem to have also, in terms of club form, not been the absolute stars that everyone thought that they would be. Do you think that France can find their confidence or their sparkle again?
Yeah, I agree with actually what you say there. I think a lot of people had huge expectations for some of the names you mentioned. They haven't been very good, but they haven't performing maybe to the same level that we've seen them at certain points in their international career. Also, you have to think about Alison Pinault. She's been someone who's been very regular for the French national team. She's out with a broken nose. I think it'll be her first time to ever miss a major tournament in 14 years. Amandine Leno also hasn't been selected. She may rejoin the team at a later date, but for the moment, she's not in the squad. A few question marks there, but they do have a lot of talented players. Melanie Nocandy also is a player from Metz, 22-year-old left back. She's a very exciting prospect. As a group, on paper, it looks very, very strong. But as you said, sometimes they can suffer a little bit from inconsistency, and we saw that at the last World Championship. That's the big question. Can they put that behind them now? They haven't played a lot of friendlies together, and will they be able to turn on and perform on day one?
I reckon so. I have a lot more belief in this French team than the two of you seem to have. I think even though Leonard is not in the squad at the moment, they still have Laura Glauser in there, who's very good, and Cleopatra Durlow, two very strong goalkeepers playing at a Champions League level. And I think that's the key thing when you look at this squad. The majority of the squad are playing for Metz or Brest-Britannia, who have both been very strong in Europe this year. There's a few of them playing for Dürr as well. You've got Gras Zadi, who plays for Rostov, who I think is going to really take this team by the scruff of the neck in attack. Alison Pinault is a bit of a talisman for this squad over the years, but she doesn't add as much as she used to in attack, I feel. So although she'll be missed in terms of the team spirit and defense, I think they might actually be a bit freer in attack this time. And a free-flowing French attack is a scary thing. So for me, they're the top dogs. They're going to win Group A. But what do you think? Or who's going to get knocked out, Brian?
I'm going to go for Montenegro to get knocked out.
Okay. And Alex, who's going to finish second and third?
Denmark second, Montenegro third, Slovenia to get knocked out, because I don't think Anna Gross has enough support, and there's only so much she can do.
So we all think France is going to win the group?
Yes.
It's going to be close between them and Denmark.
Interesting. Group B then. We have Russia, who were the beaten finalists at the last Euro. We've got Spain, the beaten finalists at the last World Championship. You've got Sweden, who were always there, thereabouts. And you've got Czech Republic, who I think have no chance in this group.
I think this group is quite interesting, because if you looked at it 6 months ago or last year, if we look at the World Championship last year, this would have been a real tough one to call. And if I was in Group A, I'd be really scared of this group. But we have seen a Russia team absolutely decimated by injuries. It's, you know, they've lost their key star, Anna Vikhireva. They lost their defensive anchor, Anna Sen, to an injury, both out for the tournament. And their rising star, who had the chance to really take over this competition and make it their own, Mikhailichenko, tore her cruciate ligament. And really, I just don't think they have the firepower. So it's not the Russia team that we have seen before. And it will be, I have no idea where they'll get the firepower, where they'll get the goals from their back line. Everything sits on Dmitrieva's shoulders, and both on the defensive end and the offensive end. And it's going to be difficult to see Russia excel at the levels that you would usually expect from them. And with Spain, another team that lost their absolute star in terms of Alexandria Cabral Barbosa, who was really the player that got them to that silver medal in the World Championship last year with 60 goals and 33 assists. I don't think they can replace her either. So the two teams that you would think are the ones gunning for that semi-final spot are a little bit of a question mark. And that's why when you combine it with Group A, I think France are looking very strong in an overall position for the tournament. But Sweden, what do we expect from Sweden, Chris?
Sweden. Sweden actually did have a couple of test matches over the weekend. They played Hungary twice. They lost the first test match, but then won the second one quite comfortably and looked very strong as well in that second test match. Now, over the years, Sweden are always kind of a fly in the ointment. They are always giving the big teams troubles. To be fair, last year at the World Championship, they probably should have qualified for the semi-finals. They were in the easier side of the draw and then blew it basically by losing to Montenegro in the final game. And 2 years ago at the Euro, they almost got through as well, beating Russia in the final game, drawing with France in the game before that. So they have a lot of pedigree, this team. They are missing a few players, but I think the players that are there are worth focusing on. Bella Gulden, for example, who gave birth last year, she's slowly but surely come back into very good form, but she's a great playmaker still. And she, I think, is getting better with every game that she plays. Another woman who gave birth very recently, Yamina Roberts, she gave birth in August and was back playing a few weeks later. She's an absolute phenomenon, a real superwoman. She's back in the squad as well, and I think she's a really dangerous left back. They are missing Michaela Messing, who is a big, big shooter, out with an ACL injury. But their goalkeepers are very strong, their defense is very strong, and the line player duo of Lynn Blom, who was in the World Championship All-Star team last year, and Anna Lagerqvist, who moved to Rostov Don over the summer and has been playing very well. I think that's a real danger area, and an area that other teams seem to be struggling with at the moment, finding good, strong line players. So I think with them on the line, and with the likes of Bella Gulden, who can find the line player with her eyes literally blindfolded, I think they're in a pretty good shape, and I think they could surprise a few teams this year.
It's interesting, when I was reading about the Swedish squad, Thomas Axner, the coach, has brought in five debutants for Sweden who have never played before. So a very, very young squad. And we've seen something similar with the Danish squad as well. And some of the other squads, like the Dutch squad, is also quite young. Isn't this really the perfect tournament for kind of giving these young players a taste of the big stage? With no crowd here, I mean, no, obviously nobody wants to see handball play without a crowd, but we're forced to do that at the moment. But isn't this an interesting kind of situation we find ourselves in? Now we have all these young teams coming onto the big stage, and maybe this is the perfect place for them to get their toes wet.
I agree. I don't think anyone will be absolutely criticized for a bad performance. Any team, any coach will be, you know, shut down after a bad performance in this championship. There's probably the least pressure compared to any tournament. So it's a perfect chance. And with the amount of players missing, having a young team is actually being forced on a lot of these squads. And we could see, yeah, a new generation of players blossom in this tournament, which would be a fantastic outcome.
We haven't spoken about Spain yet. Are you guys completely ruling the reigning world silver medalist out of contention here?
I wouldn't be as extreme as Alex. Obviously, Barbosa is a massive loss to them, but I think they've players like Lara Gonzalez, they've Peña and Fernandez. They all can score goals, and I think it's going to be a big ask for them to fill those shoes. But comparison to Russia, who are missing three of their biggest stars. I mean, Alex mentioned about Anna Sen being a massive force in defence, and she is, but she's also very valuable in attack, especially when you just need a goal. We've seen her time and time again in situations for Rostov Don, where in crunch time, where she's gotten the goals for them. So I think maybe Russia in that regard are a little bit worse off than Spain would be. I mean, of course, Barbosa is a massive loss, but I think they do have a few options there. So I wouldn't be quite as extreme as Alex there.
From Russia's case, I think they have a bit of a deeper squad. They do have a lot of young players who are playing Champions League handball for CSKA and Rostov Don, who can kind of step in. They won't be at the same level, but they can shine. In terms of Spain, it's a little bit more sparse at the bottom of that squad. And when you lose a top player, and I think Nerea Peña has also had quite a lot of trouble with her club situation, where she was in a pretty bad situation. Sjofuk just got that move to Esbjerg, settling in. She hasn't hit the form needed to replace a real star. So I think both teams are really going to suffer. And maybe we'll see Sweden topping this group.
Oh, that's a hot take.
Could happen. Could happen. It is a hot take, but it could happen. And I mean, like in defense of Spain, I would say the players that are there have a wealth of experience. They are one of the older squads, and I think they'll be able to manage not only the situation with missing players, but also the weird situation that this tournament is being held in quite well. I think Nerea Peña and Maria Gonzalez and Alicia Fernandez, that first choice back three, have to play very, very well, though, in every game for them to stand the chance. So they could finish first. They could finish third in this group. That's the super interesting thing. I think we all agree the Czech Republic probably won't challenge in this one. They're the big outsiders. I would reckon Russia, despite all of this, and with Ambrose Martin as the coach and the depth that Alex said they have, will probably sneak into first place there. Every team might take points off each other, so maybe they'll go through, but not with maximum points. And Spain and Sweden will go through together, both with one or two points as well.
As you said, there's going to be a lot of points, I think, that will exchange hands here. But I'm going to put my neck out here, and I'm going to say Spain to finish top of the group, Russia, and then Sweden. How about that? There you are.
There you are. Okay. On to Group C. Reigning world champions, the Netherlands, are in there. Hungary with their young guns. Croatia, who are the big outsiders, but have some interesting players. And Serbia, with a few shining lights. Sixth in the World Championship last year. Also a dangerous team. How do you call this one, Alex?
I think I'll start with an easy one and Croatia to finish last. Looking at their team and talking about what we talked about, young and inexperienced teams. They have the least experienced teams in this competition. 21 of the 22 players in the overall squad were under 30 years old, and only one player in the overall squad has more than 40 caps. Most of them are between 0 and 20. They could surprise the world, but I don't think they will. For me, the big question is about the Netherlands and if they can replace Estefania Pullman. That's the big loss. Her big cruciate ligament injury has ruled her out of this year. She was the MVP and the driving force that kind of got them that gold medal in the end. And especially her partnership with Lois Abing was really what the Netherlands were all about. So, Brian, do you think that they can replace Estefania Pullman?
It's a very difficult position for them at the moment, the centre-back position. I mean, you think that Niki Holt obviously stopped playing for the national team in 2018. They don't have the best of luck with the centre-back position. They have brought in Harma van Krij, who's a young centre-back, along with Nikita van der Vliet, also a young line player, who could be their time to shine and kind of put a stamp on the team. But it's definitely a question mark over the Dutch squad, the centre-back position. But everywhere else, I think they are pretty solid. So if you ignore the centre-back position, they have a really, really top-class squad everywhere else. So they're going to be very, very difficult to beat for any team.
First of all, I'm just very thankful we have you here to pronounce those names. Thank you. 3 years at university learning Dutch for Brian.
I knew it would come in handy.
Second of all, ignore the centre-back. How can you do that?
Take that out.
That's quite difficult in... No, it makes sense. Like that, if you take away, like besides the centre back position, they do have.
That's what I meant.
They have great talent everywhere else. Yeah, a lot of bad luck for them. Not just with Grote retiring and Pullman getting injured. Also, Delilah Omega, who probably would have been thrust into that starting centre back spot, also got a knee injury during the Champions League season with Borussia Dortmund. Yeah, tricky for them. Emmanuel Mayenaert is the coach, though. I really like the way he's worked with this Dutch team. He, despite the fact that he had a gold medal on his mind at the World Championship last year, still threw a lot of these young players into the mix in big moments of every game during that championship. And I think he will reap the rewards of that at this championship when more young players are coming in and they all have a bit more experience as well. Lois Abing is going to need to have a big championship, though, and so is Tess Vester. I think a lot is reliant on them because in the goalkeeper position, Tess can be amazing when she's on form, but when it's not her day, it can be a bit of a disaster for the Netherlands. Despite all that, I still think they're stronger than Hungary.
Yeah, Hungary's a very interesting one at the moment, and we talked about young teams already and young players having their moment to shine, and they have their wealth of young players as well. But obviously, Kim Radisson left the job last December And they didn't bring in one coach, they brought in two, Gabor Dani and Gabor Elik, the two Gabors from Cure and FTC respectively. And it's not often we see a duo at this level, a duo coaching team at this level anymore. So this is, it's a very interesting one. And I was having lunch earlier on today and I saw Anita Gerbes walking around. I was like, what's Anita Gerbes doing here? I thought she retired a few years ago. And she's here as a counsellor as well, almost like a third coach, I'd say. And that's an interesting fact there. So this Hungarian team, as I said to you, with the likes of Naomi Hafra at left back and Katrin Kluber at right back, I have two massive talented young players there, mixed in with the likes of probably like Tomori at more experienced left back, and then Aniko Kovacic. It's amazing to say that she's now an experienced player. It seems like she's been young forever, if you know what I mean. And she's on 130 caps, second most now in this squad. So it's an interesting mix, but I do think that the Netherlands would be a level stronger than this Hungarian side.
But we've been talking about Hungary as a young team, it feels like, for about 4 years, and they're always ready to make that surprise. And Naomi Hafer is going to lead them. All of this talk has been there for quite a while. And to be honest, I haven't seen enough from them that shows that they can take a step into the next level. So I think they'll be in a nice position, but I'm more interested in Serbia and what they can bring to this championship. Of course, we spoke with Lekic, and Andrej Lekic, you know, really showed the importance of the national team to her. She's one of these players who's won everything at club level, but hasn't quite got there on the national level. And again, it's one of these teams with, is there enough star power around her? They did really well in 2019 in Japan. They finished sixth. They probably had potential to do more. So do you think they will be able to climb higher than that sixth position this year, Chris?
I do. And they managed to finish sixth there without Andreja Lekic in the squad. Kristina Liskovic did a great job in the playmaker position there. And I'm really interested to see how the two of them work together, because I think they're going to have to work together very well, Liskovic and Lekic, if they're going to do well at this championship. Besides that, Katarina Kerpes-Slezak on the right wing was the top scorer at the last Euro. She's a great winger and is back, though, after giving birth. So it's always interesting to see how quickly they can get back to that top level. Dragana Svijic, though, is out of the squad. I think she's having a minor surgery. Is that right, Brian?
I believe so.
She's leaving this one with an eye towards being back for the Olympic qualifiers next year. But they still have Sladana Poplazic in there, who plays for Brest Britannia and is a fantastic line player. So they do have a fairly good starting seven, a bit like Spain, I would say. Maybe the strength and depth isn't quite there, but on their day, they could beat anyone.
I don't know why, but I still put them in below Hungary in this group. I'd say it's still probably for me Netherlands strongest, followed then by Hungary, and then Serbia a close third. I can't see Croatia doing anything major this time around.
Yeah, for me, I think Serbia will also challenge the Netherlands. I think that game will be really good. I still think the Netherlands will probably win that and win the group, but I think it's going to be incredibly tight across those three, but Serbia taking points off Hungary as well.
Yeah, Netherlands, Serbia in the first game as well in Group C, which is going to be fun. I think I tend to agree with Alex there that it'll be Netherlands first, then Serbia, then Hungary, then Croatia.
I guess we'll see.
All that talk of FTC over the years from you, Brian, has made me think of Hungary the same way. And it sounded like that when Alex was talking about them. It was like, oh, we're talking about FTC.
Yeah. And there are nine FTC players. So
Group D, Norway in there, who many people, I think, see as favourites this time around. Romania with Christina Niagu. Germany without a coach at the moment. And Poland without about 18 players.
So give us an update on the situation with Romania, Brian.
In the news just a few days ago, we discovered that Pintea, obviously a big player for Romania, tested positive for COVID. And since then, two other players have tested positive. So they have to go into isolation. So that's a bit of a blow for Romania as well. And I think the team has had to self-isolate for the rest of the day today. So I'm sure they didn't get to go to training. So they'll be going into day one of the competition with some... Yeah, with that unexpected news. So it's going to be interesting to see how they then respond to that. And that first game for Romania versus Germany is absolutely massive game, in my opinion. As you mentioned, Henk Hoener, Dutch coach of the German team, also contracted COVID, and he's going to miss that first game. So his co-trainer will take the bench for that. Absolutely massive game, and a lot of an importance for that game, for all those important points for the main round.
But really, no one's going to challenge Norway in this whole competition. Is my statement correct, guys?
Well, you think back to great Norwegian teams of the past, and it's something we touched upon in our interview with Carrie Grimsbo on one of the last podcasts, and we talked about how the competition for the goalkeeper position has always been one which has been really, really tight, and if one wasn't performing, they'd bring on another one, and sometimes down to the four-choice goalkeeper, they'd have an amazing choice. This time around, the question mark does hang over their goalkeeper position with Silje Solberg testing positive for COVID. Katrine Lunde is in the squad after pulling out due to a pregnancy. She tragically lost the child. Now she's back in again. So it's going to be a very emotional tournament for her. So it's going to be interesting to see what that position is going to look like for Norway, because in the past, it's always been a very, very, very strong position for them.
From what I've read, is true that Katrine Lunde had been back training for a week or so before she was brought back into the squad. And, you know, she's 40 years of age now. She's incredibly experienced. It will be tough for her, of course, but if she can find her way into form, then she's still a magnificent goalkeeper. Emily Stang-Zando, who is now the second choice, a Bietigheim player, she is no slouch as well. She's usually been the third choice over the years, and we may well see Solberg come back into the squad at some point during the championship. So it is probably their weakest position at the moment, but it could turn strong very, very quickly. And maybe not so much a weak position, but a questionable position at the moment. But besides that, I mean, the squad is looking so strong. I mean, where do you start?
I think
Nora Merck is back.
Yeah, Nora Merck, if she can return to any way similar form to what we've seen in the past with Norway, that backcourt with Stina Fadal and Veronica Christiansen is just unbelievable.
Like, even last year, you had Emilia Hegg Aronsson at left back, who is now like the second choice, but still like at a world-class level on her day. Henny Reistad is back, just 21. She's like the deputy for Stina Oftedal, an incredible athlete as well. And they really do have two top-class players in every position. I mean, look at the line player position. Kari Bratzit, who plays for Djur. Marit Malm-Frafjord, who plays for Esbjerg and has been through all the championships. And Heidi Lucke, who at 37... I think we've said it over and over again in this podcast, it's just a machine. So they have so many talented players in every position that it's really hard to look past them at the moment, not just for this group, but for the whole championship.
Yeah, and even when you look at some of the players they have in their extended list, like players like Marta Tomats or Silja Vade, and to think that they're backup players for this squad is absolutely incredible. So in terms of just pure talent over the whole squad, it's not really comparable with anyone else.
So easy group winners, you reckon, or will they be tested by Romania, Germany or Poland?
I would have thought that game against Romania would have been a good one. But with the stress that the Romanian team has gone through at the start of this competition, with the huge detour to the normal type of preparation that they would need to play Norway, to play at the highest level, I don't think they'll be ready for them. And as a whole tournament, I don't quite see anyone that can stand up to them. But I do really think that Brian's point about the goalkeeper is valid, because in tournaments we've seen time and time again, it's the goalkeeper that wins a championship. And yeah, let's see if the Norway goalkeepers can step up.
As for Poland, they might have also been a danger for some of these teams, but they're having serious troubles with players being out with COVID over the last few weeks. Norwegian coach Arne Senstad in there, but I think it's hard to see them do anything at this championship. I would have them in fourth place in the group. Norway clearly on top. The big question is, who's going to win on the first round of games between Romania and Germany and take that second place? Brian?
I think I'll give it to Romania because I know players like Christine Iniagu, when their backs are put against the wall, they can really perform even better than before. So I'll give it to Romania in that opening day, Romania versus Germany game.
Alex?
I don't really trust Germany. I don't think that I just don't trust them to win big games because they seem to always come very close to. They're like Bietenheim in the Champions League. They seem to get close a lot. And despite Romania's troubles, they still have Christine Iniagu, who can just win a game on her own. So she might win that game on her own. And we'll see Norway, Romania and Germany in that order with Poland in fourth place.
I'm going to go against you for this one. Because yes, Germany do seem to fall apart in the big moments, but that's at the end of the championships. At the beginning of the championships, they're a bit like Slovenia. They can be quite good. So I reckon they're going to snatch it by just the goal at the beginnings. Besides that, I agree with the positions. So we've gone through the four groups in a fair bit of detail, but we've gone to a bunch of experts to get their opinions on the entire championship. We asked them for their gold, silver, and bronze medal predictions and their MVP predictions. Of course, because we love putting our reputations on the line, we're going to do the same. But first, let's listen to our experts.
Hi everyone, my name is Heidi Müller. I'm a journalist and TV presenter at TV2 in Denmark. So I've been asked to give my predictions for this Euro. It's been really difficult, I think, to predict the medalists at this Euro, but yeah, here we go. For the third place and the bronze medals, I'm hoping and I'm also believing in Denmark to take this one. For the second place and the silver medals, I'm going to go with France. And the winner of this Euro 2020, I think it will be Norway. Also, the most valuable player, that's really hard, I think, to predict, but I'm going to go with Stine Oftedal from Norway. So let's see how this goes, if I'm correct or not. But I'm really looking forward to this Euro in Denmark. So everyone enjoy and please take care. See you out there.
Hello, this is Bjorn Patzen, and these are my top three for the EHF Euro of the women in 2020. My number one is Norway, because they have this Scandinavian winners mentality and the mental strength. Then on number two it's the Netherlands, because except Estevana Pullman, they have their best squad. And they know how to win since the World Championship in Japan last year. And on number three, I have the physical strongest team, in my opinion, called France. And they have the best coach, so they win the bronze medal with it.
And my MVP is a goalkeeper this time, Amandine Leno from France.
Hi, this is Nagore Odriozola from Playmaker. So this is my prediction for the Euro. Bronze medal goes to Russia, silver medal goes to Norway, and gold medal goes to Spain.
And this is Laura Aguena, also from Playmaker. And I have the same countries for the podium, but my bronze goes to Russia, silver goes to Spain, and gold medal goes to Norway. And when it comes to the most valuable player of the championship, we both agree that that player will be
Alicia Fernandez from Spain.
Joachim Schutz, Strechspieler.com. Well, it's happening. The Women's EHF Euro 2020 is upon us. And what could be easier than to make some predictions in these unprecedented and uncertain times? Still, here we go. Once all is said and done, Norway will have found their way to the very top in European handball once again, closely followed by France and the Netherlands. In doing so, Stine Oftedal will win the SVP award of this championship. At least on this point, I'm less uncertain than on any of the previous predictions.
Hi, this is Courtney Gain, journalist for the EHF, covering the Women's EHF Euro 2020 as part of the official website team. My prediction is that we are going to see the same semi-finalists as last year's Women's World Championship in Japan, Netherlands, Norway, Russia and Spain. I think it is the year of the Netherlands. They know how to win now, and I think we're going to see them top the podium. They will beat Norway in the final, and Russia will win the bronze medal ahead of Spain. I think the MVP is going to be Loa Sebbing. She's been increasingly important for the Netherlands in recent years, and with the absence of Estebana Pollmann, she has an even more important role to play, and I think she's going to step up and do it and have a great championship.
Hi guys, this is Daniel Höglund, commentator for TV3 Norway. I think it will be a really hard and interesting battle for at least two of the four places in the semifinals. A lot of teams capable of reaching that this year, but still, I've chosen a little boring and safe list of medal winners, I will say. For the bronze medal, I choose Russia. Still, without some of their key players, they have so many good ones to choose from. My second place, France. Such an exciting team, tremendous skills, different skill sets, and I believe they will bounce back from that horrible World Championship last year. And it's nice to say Norway back to being number one favorite. They will take the gold medal, the best team they had since 2017. I feel really confident about that one. And for my MVP, I have chosen Stine Bredal Oftedal with Veronica Kristiansen and Nora Mørk back for Norway. She will really shine as a playmaker once again. Bye, guys.
Thank you to all of the experts. And we did say we'll put our neck on the line for these predictions as well. But to see that and a layout of all of the different experts, you should follow us, go on to Twitter or Instagram at Handball Hour, and you'll see our predictions as well as all the experts. And you can judge yourself whether we are going to make fools of ourselves like we did last year.
We always do.
You're such a tease, Alex.
So thank you very much. That was the Uninformed Handball Hour, and we will see you again on Saturday when we react to the first two match days of the EHF Euro 2020. From me, Brian Campion, from Chris O'Reilly, and from Alex Kulesh, we all say goodbye.